Commissioner Marwan Barghouti. We speak with Barghouti's lawyer. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Before diving in, a quick appeal. If you appreciate what you're hearing, help us out. Subscribe to the Green Planet Monitor at greenplanetmonitor.net. Now, the news with Kylie Wong.
Around the world, extreme weather is reshaping elections, turning climate change into a threat to democracy. According to the International Institute for Democracy and Electoral Assistance, at least 94 elections in 52 countries have been affected by climate-related events over the past 20 years. The report recommends that election officials collaborate with meteorological experts, environmental agencies, and disaster response organizations. As natural hazards increase, training and contingency planning is more important than ever, said Ferran Martinez Ikoma, a professor of government at Australia's Griffith University. A U.S. judge has blocked the Trump administration's latest attempt to rein in wind and solar power, exposing a deepening clash over the country's clean energy future. Massachusetts Justice Denise Casper issued a preliminary injunction last week, halting measures clean energy advocates say could delay projects racing to qualify for expiring tax credits. U.S. President Donald Trump has championed supposed cost and reliability benefits of fossil fuels. Renewable energy advocates disagree. The administration should take the hint and stop illegal attacks on projects that will help meet surging electricity demand and bring down costs for consumers, Kate Kennedy, Managing Director for Power of the Natural Resources Defense Council, said. U.S. immigration officials are planning to detain children and their families on one of the country's most toxic sites. Soil and groundwater beneath the proposed detention facility, a former U.S. Air Force base in Louisiana, are contaminated with so-called forever chemicals, PFASs, as well as asbestos and other industrial chemicals. Levels of PFAS in groundwater there are over 500,000 times higher than safety limits. Although drinking water would be supplied externally, experts warn polluted soil and air still pose significant risks, particularly for children. There shouldn't be housing at contaminated bases, and we need to be cleaning up the stuff much faster if we're going to put people in harm's way, Jared Hayes, a senior policy analyst, said. Changes to Ontario's Freedom of Information laws are sparking concern in Hamilton. Proposed policies exempting internal government discussions from disclosure reduce transparency and limit the public's ability to monitor decisions affecting environmental and community health, says Environment Hamilton, a local group. The Ontario government says the changes reduce administrative burden, but advocates fear they will weaken public oversight. The public is interested and wants to get information about the state of Ontario's environment, and they're entitled to know that, said Environment Hamilton spokesperson Ramani Nadaraja. In southern Lebanon, the Israeli military has issued fresh evacuation orders for towns north of the Litani River. The resulting buffer zone, extending over 30 kilometers into southern Lebanon, has displaced tens of thousands of civilians and raised concerns about a long-term Israeli occupation or annexation. Lebanese resistance group Hezbollah has vowed to keep fighting. Meanwhile, Israeli destruction of southern Lebanese forests, cropland, and water resources, and contamination of its soils with white phosphorus from Israeli munitions amount to ecocide, Lebanon's environment minister says in a report that's just been released. 2,500 Lebanese people have been killed by Israeli forces and almost 8,000 injured since Israel's assault on Lebanon began in March. And that's the news.
The incarceration of entire people, thousands behind bars, millions more hemmed in by barbed wire, towering walls, and a seamless system of surveillance, their movements strictly regulated, monitored, and mapped using the most sophisticated AI-based biometric algorithms. This is the situation in the occupied Palestinian territories. Since Israel's conquest of the West Bank, including East Jerusalem and Gaza, back in 1967, over 1 million Palestinians have been jailed, spirited into prisons inside Israel proper in flagrant breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention. Tens of thousands held without charge, including children, routinely subjected to what experts define as torture. In a 2023 report to the UN Human Rights Council, Italian legal scholar Francesca Albanese laid out Israel's carceral system in graphic detail, a system she says has turned occupied Palestine into a carceral continuum, a constantly surveilled open-air panopticon. In her most recent report, Albanese says that torture has become integral to Israel's system of domination and oppression, a continuous, territorially pervasive regime of psychological terror, is how Albanese describes it, designed to break bodies, deprive a people of their dignity, and force them from their land. Francesca Albanese is UN Special Rapporteur on the human rights situation in occupied Palestine. Here's a conversation we had back in 2023.
Since 1967, almost 1 million, nearly 1 million Palestinians under occupation, including tens of thousands of children, have been arrested and detained. And despite its historic dimension, this is an ongoing issue, as I documented, and its arbitrariness, it's massive, widespread, and systematic. Just let me clarify for those in the audience who are not familiar with legal jargon, but deprivation of liberty is the confinement or detention of individuals. This is not something unlawful per se, but it becomes arbitrary when it's unjust or unlawful. So, for example, without a proper legal ground, without adherence to due process, when it results in violations of fundamental rights, like the right to fair trial, the right to be free from torture, cruel or inhuman or degrading treatment, or the right to be treated with dignity and respect, which is really the essence of human rights and the protection of the individuals from the abuse of power. Now, under Israeli occupation, generations of Palestinians have endured arbitrary deprivation of liberty, often for the simplest acts of life, often for the exercise of fundamental freedoms. So, without condoning any acts of violence that the Palestinians might commit or might have committed, including against Israel or the Israelis, most of what we observe is the result of violations of international law, including what I mentioned, due process. And this undermines the legitimacy of justice administered by the occupying power. And one last point on why I decided to focus on this is that arbitrary deprivation of liberty is something that concerns individuals, large numbers of individuals, because the numbers are shocking, very high. But it complements, or it's complemented by other forms of confinement that tackles the population as a whole. And this includes physical, bureaucratic, and digital surveillance barriers that further restrict the entire Palestinian population under occupation.
And we're going to get into these details. I want to ask you, I want to get down to the numbers, the basic data. But before doing that, I'd just like to just quickly hone in on this point that you've raised. Why have you decided to tackle this as an issue? It seems to me that your central idea in this report is that incarceration of Palestinians, it's an entire system. And here you write, carcerality conceived as a large-scale system of deprivation of liberty that forces a condition of captivity on an entire population is an essential feature of settler colonialism. So Israel's carceral system, it's a cornerstone, it's a pillar of the entire system of settler colonial domination and apartheid, isn't it?
It is, and this needs to be unpacked. It is a system because it's enforced through a legal and bureaucratic administrative system. And I can unpack it. But it's also the backbone of Israel's enforced apartheid regime. Basically, Palestinians are arbitrarily detained. Actually, they are detained arrested and detained under in martial law. So under military law that is drafted by soldiers, enforced by soldiers, and Palestinians appear before judges who are soldiers, while the settlers, the Israeli settlers living in the same territory, are under Israeli civil law. So there is, on the one hand, a web of 2,500 military orders, together with remnants of British colonial emergency regulations applying to the Palestinians, while the settlers who are illegal in the occupied Palestinian territory, they benefit from civil law. So, of course, this is apartheid, and because it's discriminatory in nature and is used with intent to dominate and subjugate the Palestinians, as it has been amply demonstrated by Palestinians, Israelis, and international human rights organizations. And as I said, as I documented in the report, this is both a tool and an end in itself. Arrest and detention becomes a way to punish, to discipline the population within a system where confinement is the rule. Because if we look at the grounds to arrest and detain Palestinians, they lead to disciplining and punishing Palestinians for stepping out of the confines set by the occupying power in a land which is slated for colonial expansion, to preserve and expand the settlements, the space, the physical but also metaphysical space for the Palestinians continues to shrink.
How many Palestinians are currently being held in Israeli jails?
Currently, there are approximately 5,100 Palestinians in Israeli prisons, including 165 children. Now, over 1,260 of them are detained in what is called administrative detention, so detention without charge, without trial. Now, 20 of these are children. These are huge numbers and they're not even new, because when I say the magnitude and the documented gravity, think of the First Intifada. During the First Intifada, over 100,000 Palestinians were detained over a span of 6 years. During the Second Intifada, other 6 years, 70,000 Palestinians were arrested and detained. And over the 2 months of what was called the 2021 Unity Intifada, 3,000 Palestinians were detained. Last year, which was, if I'm correct, one of the years which registered the highest records in recent years, 7,000 Palestinians, including almost 900 children, were arrested and detained. So it's quite systematic.
What do Palestinians get arrested, detained, and imprisoned for?
It varies. There are security and public offense related grounds enshrined, as I said, in an intricate system of thousands of military orders and emergency regulations from the British Mandate's time. So, as I said, there might be cases where Palestinians have effectively committed something that constitutes an offense under the penal laws of all states, the criminal laws of all states, under international law. It's striking that the military orders that I've studied broadly and vaguely criminalize the exercise of basic fundamental freedoms. Let me give you an example. For political gatherings of more of 10 people, these might include processions, vigils, but technically, even weddings, which are not authorized by the army, can lead to the 10 years imprisonment. Where political gatherings, where it's something where anything political might be discussed. So you see, it's very vague and still it leads to 10 years imprisonment. And this is the ground that leads to arrest and detention of protesters, for example. Another one, entering restricted areas in the West Bank, closed military zones, including in East Jerusalem, leads to 7 to 10 years imprisonment. Now, consider that 18% of the occupied West Bank is considered close to military area. These are areas where Palestinians live. Think of Masafer Yatta. The very fact of being present in that area that Israel has slated for, I don't know, military exercise, military training, leads to arrest and detention. Or another one, membership in or contacts with or possessing materials related to an organization that is designated as hostile by Israel is punishable with 10 years imprisonment. Now, bear in mind that hostile organization is a broad category that has been used by Israel to criminalize any organizations that might oppose the occupation. Over 400 organizations have been criminalized since 1967, including all major political parties, civil society groups, and charities. Think that now, as of a few years, even the most renowned human rights organizations like Adamir, Halak, Defense for Child International, DCI, are designated as terrorists. And this leads to decades in jail. And since 2020, leadership of such groups can be punished with 25 years in jail or even life imprisonment.
But on the absurd end of the spectrum, one can be arrested, detained for unfurling a Palestinian flag or for offending a soldier's honor.
Yeah, offending a soldier's honor leads to 1 year in prison. And again, you know, I've documented dozens of these cases. I've given examples of provisions in military orders that lead to this incredibly disproportionate, as if they were even justified, sentences. But think of something that is not one of those cases described, like throwing any object, including a stone. You might argue, yeah, but this is not a very peaceful act. Fine, but this is the offense that most children are sentenced with and is subject to 10 years imprisonment and even 20 years if the stone or the object is thrown at a moving vehicle, including armored vehicle. The one that the army uses to guard its forever occupation, like my predecessor calls it. So you see, there is, on the one hand, international law which prohibits the occupying power to impose allegiance, a duty of allegiance on the occupied population. And on the other hand, everything that emerges from the provisions I just shared with you lead to this. Palestinians are punished for opposing the occupation, whatever means they use, including, as I said, legal means like possessing books or criticizing the occupation. This is the reality.
If I'm a Palestinian youth or young adult who gets arrested, detained by the Israelis, what system or process will I go through as a Palestinian in the course of being held preliminarily, charged, and tried?
It varies. Bear in mind that 80% of Palestinians are detained, so even before incarceration, before the trial. They are often detained in prisons and detention centers in Israel. 80% Palestinians are detained in Israeli prisons.
Inside the Green Line.
Yeah, in Israel. And this is in a flagrant violation of international law, which prohibits the transfer of the occupied population outside the occupied territory. So this is a case of forcible transfer. It's a war crime. And then the process is handled by the army. So you are detained by soldiers and then tried before military tribunals. Those who serve as judges are not professional judges. They are soldiers. And there is a lot of violence throughout the procedures that lead to arrest and detention. Beating, verbal abuse, humiliation are recurring practices during arrest.
Access to lawyers if I'm some youth.
It's really complicated. Bear in mind that Palestinians residing in the West Bank, let alone in Gaza, or cannot travel to Israel, do not have permit to travel to Israel. They need to obtain a permit. So unless the detainee find a lawyer in Israel, it's going to be very hard to be represented. But also legal defense is hampered in so many ways because the arrest weren't when it's served. Many cases are of detention without charge, based on secret evidence, which is not disclosed for security reasons, either to the detainee or to the lawyer. So it's impossible to set up a defense, right? It's not easy to visit the detainee for the family. And when these concerns children, it's the trauma that goes with these practices is incredible. So let me unpack these two issues. The fact that Palestinians are commonly detained outside the occupied territory triggers a domino effect of violations that range from what I just described, so a prevention of family visits and access to a lawyer, to the impossibility to also for the Palestinians to also complain against the conditions they face. And there are human rights monitors, including in Israel, like Physicians for Human Rights or PICATI, the Committee Against Torture in Israel, which have documented for decades practices like confinement in unsanitary and overcrowded cells, severe and prolonged physical and psychological assault, often to elicit confessions, deprivation of sleep and nourishment, medical negligence. And in some cases, there are documented torture, cruel or inhumane or degrading treatment. Now, going back to the second issue, children. Children can be liable to imprisonment since age 12, and they're treated as inhumanely and lawlessly as adults. I have collected information and I've also relied on solid sources documenting an average of almost 30 days in solitary confinement for children. So imagine a child not being represented by a lawyer, not being visited by a family member, detained for 13 days in a cell where he or she is exposed to sensorial deprivation. This leaves an indelible traumatic mark, especially because during this detention phase, Palestinian children are often exposed to physical and psychological abuse, again, to elicit confession, sometimes of acts that have not committed.
And this is all prior to actual conviction, because I was going to ask you, like, once you've been convicted, sentenced to 5 or 10 years or whatever, what are the conditions like in detention, in actual final detention?
Well, first of all, there is a striking conviction rate of 99%. Because, you know, for the Palestinians sometimes, and this is something that is really, I mean, I was shocked to learn that this is common knowledge, that Palestinians resort to plea bargain in order to see the end of their inferno, to be out of it, because otherwise they wouldn't know, they would be suspended in this limbo of the military justice system without seeing their way out. So because they are presumed guilty, they are forced into signing confessions and plea bargain. And then once they're sentenced, they might have a reduced sentence compared to the charge I mentioned, but the conditions are the ones I described. So there is no real difference, not sensible difference between the incarceration of child and an adult. Although some quote-unquote improvements are told to have been introduced. But of course, this is not sufficient to meet international standards. And again, we are talking of deprivation of liberty in a context of an occupation that operates outside what is permitted by international law. And then to answer your question, the conditions in jail do not meet international standards. What I said is pretty much the overcrowded and unsanitary cells and being subject to physical and psychological deprivation and assault is quite common for Palestinians.
Does the International Committee of the Red Cross have access to Israeli prisons? Does the ICRC go into Israeli prisons? It's their job to look after the welfare of protected people. Are you aware of what the situation is vis-a-vis ICRC access to Israeli prisons?
It's clearly their domain, but it's unclear to me the positive impact of this work of all the prisoners that have personally, former prisoners, including children, I've interviewed, and none of them mentioned ICRC. So yes, this falls in the realm of competence of ICRC, but I cannot really respond about, I cannot answer about what they do. You know, ICRC operates under condition of confidentiality. On their website, I read that they facilitate family visit, 15,000 family visits per year. But, you know, if you confront these figures with the numbers of Palestinians imprisoned, which is 5,000 at the moment, I mean, these numbers are clearly low. And again, I really don't see anything in Israeli detention practices that is close to what is commonly understood as a fair trial. Let me put it this way.
And if I'm a Palestinian, suppose I'm a Palestinian with diabetes or with some sort of chronic disorder or a heart condition. Now I'm moving beyond young people, moving into the adult population. What level of health care is provided in Israeli prisons? What's the food like?
This is a quite detailed, I mean, this requires a quite detailed answer to be very accurate, and that requires a case-by-case assessment. But relying on the information provided by, for example, PICATI or OMT or Physician for Human Rights, I can say that the denounced cases of medical negligence are important. There is a sort of discriminatory system that applies to Palestinians in terms of access to medical care for a number of reasons, and also access to food, for example. Palestinians in many instances have to purchase their own food and toiletries in prison. So this is why Human Rights Monitor lament the substandard conditions under Israeli custody.
Now, since 1967, an estimated 800,000 Palestinians have been imprisoned in Israeli jails. And I gather, right, if there's hardly a Palestinian person, hardly a Palestinian adult or youth whose family members, one or more, have not been in Israeli prisons. If I'm a 16-year-old or an 18-year-old, chances are my father was imprisoned, or my mother, or my siblings. And if you're an older person in your extended family, I mean, there's hardly a family that's not been touched by Israel's carceral system. It's an imprisoned population. So my question is, what impact does Israel's carceral system have? What impact has it had on Palestinian society? And the ancillary question is, of course, of course, the answer is it's had a terrible impact. My next question would be, well, is this the purpose of the system? Is this Israel's aim? But let's take these one by one. What impact has it had, to your knowledge, on Palestinian society? And is this Israel's aim?
So first of all, let me ask you directly your question. Is it a system? Yes, it is. I call it of widespread carcerality. I refer, on the one hand, to the large-scale imprisonment and control through this architecture that often amounts to persecution. But it also includes surveillance and confinement out of prison. So it's a system that entails both arbitrary deprivation of liberty and often ill-treatment behind bars and confinement beyond bars. So the life of Palestinians under occupation fits the concept of widespread carcerality, hinging on the concept of carceral continuum coined by Michel Foucault in his Surveiller Punir, Surveil and Punish. From the individual level of captivity, where Palestinians are arrested and detained, we move to a micro level of captivity, where the entire population is confined and trapped in enclaves, as if they were a collective threat to the security of Israel. So in this sense, yes, detention and confinement are tools of the occupation itself. So let me just expand on these beyond bars form of deprivation of liberty, which is the core of the carceral continuum. I said in the beginning that the occupation has set up physical barriers, bureaucratic barriers, and surveillance. So what are the physical barriers that constrain, confine and constrain the Palestinians? Think of settlements, the way they ring each Palestinian city and towns. This is not just the reality of Jerusalem surrounded north, east, and south by settlements. It's also the reality for most Palestinians down and